Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah!
Of Rebel Rise Live. I'm David Johnson along with your co-host Dave Bevan on this February 10th, 2016. And, you know, we'll jump right into things here and just immediately address the dark cloud that is hanging over the Ole Miss football program right now. There is certainly a lot of concern in the fan base, particularly after the Associated Press story came out Tuesday night with more details on what Ole Miss is facing here with this notice of allegations from the NCAA. Our sources that we have talked to for a while on this, our Ole Miss sources, indicate that at the end of the day, this is not going to be the huge deal in which some in the quasi-media are trying to make it out to be. Now, is it a big deal? Sure it is. Anytime the NCAA is looking at your program, it's a big deal. You know, we're not going to try to sugarcoat that. But will the ramifications of this be something that would sidetrack the success the Ole Miss football program has seen over the course of the last four seasons under Hugh Freeze? And that answer, it's a resounding no. We can only tell you what our Ole Miss sources are relaying to us on the condition of anonymity, obviously, because no one from Ole Miss is going to speak to this with the exception of Ross Bjork and possibly Hugh Freeze. And we've reported everything that those sources have told us. Of course, with the AP report out last night, of the 28 rules violations, and let me say this, David Brandt is an excellent reporter. He's got his sources pinned down on this. So there's no doubt about that. Of the 28 rule violations, 13 allegedly aimed at the football program, 9 of which, according to the AP, occurred during Hugh Freeze's tenure. Now, let's just kind of think out loud here about those 9. One being Laramie Tunsil and the whole rental car situation in which he served a 7-game suspension for last season. There is another player who was suspended last season, C.J. Hampton. So that's number 2. Number 3, we know now improper contact from an Ole Miss assistant football coach with a recruit. My understanding is that that coach has already been penalized, as have the 2 players, by not being allowed to go out on the road and recruit last spring. That's how old of issues we're dealing with here. Now, the 4th involves some kind of transportation issue, as we understand it, between a staff associate and prospects. And from what I'm being told, this may have occurred up to 6 times, which if you add them up, 1 Tunsil, 2 C.J. Hampton's little situation, 3 the assistant coach, plus 6 equal 9. So that's, as I understand it, at this hour on February the 10th. Now, the ramifications of all of it, which has the fan base nervous, I understand, will not be anything to the magnitude that could possibly derail the resurgence of the Ole Miss football program. And I think you can rest easy on that. Of course you're going to have some people that are going to beat a drum and say, you know, woe is Ole Miss. We'll just have to see what happens at the end of the day, but I'm telling you right now, every glimmer of thing that we can get, and I stayed on the phone 3.5-4 hours last night talking to different people, is that at the end of the day, there will be some NCAA penalties. Nothing that you're going to jump off a bridge about. And that's what I've got to say about that. That's what I know about that right now. Nobody's trying to cover anything up. I don't have any sources within the NCAA. Obviously, David Brandt does. I can only tell you what my sources are telling me. And that's where we stand at this hour. So is it anything you should lose a lot of sleep over? I don't think it is. And that's all we're going to say about that. All right, Dave. Just wanted to kind of get that out in the air before we motored our way into anything else. Hey, how about that Bernie Sanders last night, man? Boy, did he blitz through New Hampshire like Sherman. Were you surprised at that?
I must have missed that. Michael has joined in on the podcast. Michael, welcome to the show.
Did you watch Bernie's blitz through New Hampshire last night in between the Gators and the Rebels playing? Bernie Sanders just annihilated Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. And, of course, Donald Trump did exactly what the polls said he was going to do in New Hampshire, and that's win by double digits. So what do you think about that, Michael?
Yeah, I don't know if you can really read too much into Donald Trump's win last night, because I'm pretty sure there are about 6 or 7 Republicans in the state of New Hampshire, and that has to be about it up there. But yeah, of course, I it's pretty obvious that Bernie was going to kill up there, and he did. But I just saw the results today. I didn't see what Bernie said, but I did watch a replay of Larry David on SNL. So I feel like I kind of watched Bernie Sanders. So
yep.
I don't know. You'll have to fill us in.
Well, you know, I'm just amazed that the United States of America and the Democratic Party, right now the guy leading is a self-avowed socialist. I mean, that just kind of blows my mind. But, yeah, he looks just like Larry David. I mean, I think they could be brothers. Larry David does a good Bernie Sanders, and he'll have a lot of SNL guest host roles if Bernie Sanders wins the presidency. That is for sure. But, you know, that's what you do, you know, when football season's not going on and maybe things aren't going well for the basketball team, and which we'll talk about here in just a second. And baseball hasn't fired up yet. Hey, politics is a blood sport. Very entertaining, very interesting to watch. And we're not a candidate, by the way. We're just talking. But for the record, Michael, I think Trump did get about 93,000 votes in the state of New Hampshire yesterday. So there is more than just a few Republicans up there. But, you know, here's my thing, Michael, and Dave, or, you know, New Hampshire, I mean, the news media, can they not do a show from New Hampshire that isn't set inside of a diner? I mean, my impression of New Hampshire, and I've never been there, is there's a lot of snow on the ground and everybody hangs out at a diner all day. I mean, what deals with that?
I don't know. I mean, I just, like you, I've never seen New Hampshire as a big metropolitan area, but like a New York or, you know, a Philadelphia or something like that. So I agree with you. I see that too, that, you know, it just seems like it's always takes place in a diner.
Yeah, I mean, Fox News, I think they've broadcast out of this one diner in particular now for the last week. So I'm sure they're glad the primary's over and the folks at the diner can get back to their regular eating and not look around and see Donald Trump sitting over in the corner.
Well, Dave, you know that if Bernie and Trump both win the nomination, then they're only going to be able to hold debates inside rooms with mattresses on all four sides.
Yeah, I can see that. I think you could even throw Hillary in that category, but, man, I don't think she's going to cross the finish line, guys. I mean, you know, she got blitzed last night. I know she's going into some states where she's got a rather large fan base, if you will, in some of these states that the primaries are coming up on, you know, with Super Tuesday and all of that. But right now, Bernie is the miracle man. Who would have thunk it? You know, I think everybody kind of chuckled way back when all this kind of got underway about a year ago that Bernie Sanders was running for president. And then all of a sudden, Bernie's become like a cult figure, particularly among the nation's young people. And Donald Trump, you know, hey, what did the news media talking heads tell us? He won't run. He's just messing with it. He's trying to get some publicity. Like, Trump needs any more publicity. And then he says he's going to run. They said, well, he won't last long. But Donald Trump's been like the Energizer Bunny in all of this. And then you've got poor Jeb Bush. My goodness. And, you know, I sit here and I think to myself, I'm like, if these guys aren't smart enough to figure out Chris Christie, John Kasich, even though he finished second in New Hampshire, Jeb Bush, that they're not going to be able to win this thing, why do I think they're smart enough to be president? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just my simplistic way of thinking, but that thought has crossed my mind. If I know this guy's not going to be elected and he can't figure it out, then I must be smarter than him and he doesn't need to be president. Speechless, huh? Look, both of you speechless with that.
I don't want to alienate too much of the readership with my views on American politics.
Yeah. As I've said, and we'll say it again, we're not endorsing anyone, but it is a blood sport. It's fun to watch the competition, so to speak. Let's get to something a little bit more important, and let's talk about Ole Miss. I don't mean it's more important, but something a little bit more topical for our show. Let's talk about Ole Miss basketball. Michael, they went to Gainesville. They battled hard. They lost. And now, I want to ask you to look into your crystal ball a little bit and forecast whether or not this team still has a chance, sans running the SEC tournament, of making the NCAAs.
Yeah, absolutely. What was really a positive thing to see from last night was, one, that Ole Miss was able to hang in that game without Stephen Moody for a lot of that game. Moody has not gone into foul trouble once before this season, and then he has three quick fouls in the first half and had to sit, and Ole Miss goes down 7 at the break. They come right out on fire, take a 43-40 lead on what I believe was a 16 to I don't remember the exact numbers, but they took a 43-40 lead. And then Florida went on a 10-0 run to make it 50-43. And from there, Moody picked up another foul late, and they fouled out with, I believe, 3 minutes to go with the game still in balance. And they continued to fight, especially Tomas Chiello. There was one where he took a jumper from the top of the key. He missed it, fought through three different guys running like a wild man through the paint, and finally caught up to the ball. And he looked a little out of control at first, but he takes it right to the rack and lays it in. And also, it was Saiz's first game back, and he had some big sunglasses on, looking like Blade Runner or something of the sort. But you could tell that he wasn't 100%. So I don't want to sound too much like an apologist here, but there was a lot going for Ole Miss for, you know, not having 100% Saiz and having a Moody in foul trouble.
Do you know how much the NCAA selection committee is going to care about that? I mean, it was just a lost Florida on the road.
That's not what I'm saying.
It was a heroic effort. I'm not downplaying that, but I mean now, I mean you're game 500 in conference play, game under 500 in conference play. Now Arkansas looked horrible last night, and I'm sure they're not going to try to put two in a row together that look like that and then lopsided loss to Mississippi State. But I mean, I would think you're in a situation now where, you know, you better catch fire, and I'm not talking about winning a couple in a row. You better catch fire if you want to have a puncher's chance to get into the dance without winning the SEC tournament title outright. Am I wrong to think that right now?
Well, Dave, I was by no means saying that the NCAA tournament would take into account any of the Ole Miss struggles that are against their own power. I was just laying the groundwork for the brilliant point that I was about to make.
All right, be careful. This is going to turn into a Republican debate here.
You always have to have faith that no matter what I'm starting at, David, the end game is always just going to be pure, utter brilliance. It's
absolutely.
From everything that, like, Moody's not going to get into foul trouble. He's only done it once this year, and that was last night. And then Saiz is only going to improve over time. That after Vanderbilt, there was something that I felt being around the players and being around Coach Kendi that I haven't felt the rest of the year. And there was really that, you know, eat or get eaten type of deal with this team. And you could see it last night that all those different guys were playing hard win. Really, if you said before the year, all right, at Florida, Saiz is not going to be 100% and isn't going to play a lot of minutes, and Moody is going to be out for much of the game with foul trouble, and then the rest of the game he's playing, he has to watch how he's playing defense, he has to watch how he's driving in the basket, and say, hey, you're only going to lose by a couple at Florida, and you're not going to believe that, because that means big games from Giello and Newby and Brooks. And I really think Brooks and Giello are developing into good scores, that there's not a game left on Ole Miss's schedule that is unwinnable. At Texas A&M, it's going to be very, very difficult. But it's good that it's on Ole Miss's schedule, because it gives them that sort of marquee win going down the stretch that, you know, the committee will look at and say, all right, they won, seven of the last eight, but did they beat anybody? And they could say, yeah, they beat Texas A&M. So it's certainly possible that they can go on a run. They have everything there mentally right now to make that run. It's all a matter of getting the bodies together, getting everyone healthier, and going on a regular schedule. There's been a lot of times this year where, you know, you're playing games on different days, and sometimes you have some short rest, like a Thursday to Saturday split. The rest of the games are Tuesday and Saturday, except for the final week of the year when it goes Wednesday, Saturday. And so they'll have some time to get the body rested, get into a routine, and I really think that they could make a run. And when you look at where they'll be seated in Nashville, there's really no one that they should look at and be afraid of, because the one team in the entire conference who matches up the worst for Ole Miss is Vanderbilt. And they beat Vanderbilt without Sebastian Saiz, and they were able to conquer that length in Oxford. So I think it's possible.
Let me ask you this, and should the focus be on where Ole Miss can climb, how high they could climb in the SEC standings right now, as opposed to whether or not they'll make the big dance? Because right now Ole Miss is in a logjam for seventh place in the SEC standings. It's Ole Miss, Arkansas, Tennessee, all 5 and 6. Right now, and that occupies the seventh spot. The SEC is not going to get seven teams in the NCAA tournament. I mean, so should the focus really just be, hey, let's not look at this NCAA picture yet? You know, let's look up at the scoreboard at the end of the season and see where we stand. And should they be more concentrating more? And I guess the two go hand in hand in one sense. But should they be concentrating on trying to climb a little bit higher into the upper tier of the SEC standings?
Yeah, absolutely. You need to rise in that pecking order, and getting into that double bye would certainly be big, but only being in the single bye portion of the bracket wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, to get an opportunity for an extra win and things like that. They're certainly hitting the ground running right now and want to climb up those SEC ranks. A win last night against Florida would have put them into a virtual tie, which would have been big. But you just got to focus on what's ahead of you now, and it starts with Arkansas. And right now, Arkansas, like I've said it before, I'll say it again, they're not the team that you're used to seeing coming out of Fayetteville. And Ole Miss will have a very good chance to win that game. And honestly, I hate one of the most overused phrases in sports is a do or die type of game. But if there's anything, if they beat Arkansas, I don't know if they're going to do. But if they lose to Arkansas, it's pretty safe to say that's a dead season unless they win the SEC tournament.
And that game is in the Pavilion Saturday night. Ole Miss 9-2 at home. Arkansas is 1-7 on the road. So the Rebels have been playing pretty good in Oxford. Arkansas, not much success outside of Fayetteville this year. So maybe that's something that's would play into Ole Miss's favor. Hogs 1-7 on the as a true road team, 0-3 in neutral site games. Now they're 11-2 up on the hill over there across the river. So we'll see how it plays out. But I think you're right. I think it is a do or die. And we talked about this earlier. Would a split? Could they split with Florida and Arkansas and still have a little life left in them? Probably. But, they can't lose to Arkansas. That would be a devastating loss. It would be a bad loss. And usually Arkansas doesn't represent a bad loss on your ledger. But this year, particularly how Mississippi State just exploded on them last night, it would be a bad loss for the Rebels to lose to the Razorbacks Saturday inside the Pavilion. All right, Dave Bevin, moving on from basketball. And, Michael, we appreciate all your fine knowledge on the Ole Miss basketball team. You've talked to a couple of 2017 recruits, one guy in particular, a linebacker out of the state of Pennsylvania, that recently picked up an Ole Miss offer. We'll have a story on that up front here in just a little bit. But what can you tell us about this young man from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Well, David, over the past couple of days, Ole Miss is just really extending the offers well outside the state of Mississippi, across Texas, and then up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. The 2017 four-star David Aspen, one of those up there in Pittsburgh. He was also offered the same day as fellow teammate four-star offensive guard 2017 prospect C.J. Thorpe. I talked to Adams yesterday, and he was very excited about the offer. One question that I'd seen out there on our board was, is there any Ole Miss connections to it? I can confirm there isn't any Ole Miss ties with Adams, but he's excited to learn more about Ole Miss, and he has not visited Ole Miss campus yet. That could be something coming down the future for him. But, with the linebacker position, looking at the future, it's no question this is a must-need area to hit in the 2017 class. And David Adams fits that position for the Mike linebacker. That's where the Rebels are seeing him at. He was offered by Sean Patterson, coaching assistant, and Adams stands in at 6'2", 230 pounds heading into his senior season. So he fits the mold there. His junior year, he tallied in over 120 tackles while also leading his team to a state title and earned all-state honors for his performances. And the Rebels currently are the 23rd offer for Adams. So and it spreads all across the country. He is a very highly sought after prospect across the country. So, if a visit comes to Ole Miss in the future, it will be very interesting come, down towards the latter part of the stretch, and you may hear more of Adams at that point.
Well, this is that time of the year where there are a lot of what I call spitball offers that are going out. Schools offering kids all over the country and really just starting to build a relationship with them. And you're going to see that. Ole Miss offered a couple of wide receivers today out of Cedar Grove, Texas, which, of course, is the home of DeMarcus Lodge and Quincy Adeboyjo. So some Ole Miss connections back at Cedar Grove, and that's been a very fruitful school for Ole Miss to recruit. Now, last night, Ole Miss picked up a big one last night in junior college defensive end Markell Winters out of Jones County Junior College. I like that. Jones County, they haven't swapped over to the community college name like the rest of Mississippi's JUCOs did. They're still Jones County Junior College. Makes them kind of stand out a little bit, I think, that they held on to how the old names used to be. Everybody used to be junior college, and then they thought, well, maybe that was a little degrading. Let's call ourselves community colleges, but Jones sticks it out. And still Jones County JUCO down there. But Martell Winters, let me tell you something. 6'5", 260 pounds. He reminds one of Fadal Brown. That kind of body, that kind of ability, and he'll have two to play two when he gets to Ole Miss in next January. He's a mid-year guy. He's exactly what Hugh Freeze said he was going to go out and get. Some mid-year guys who could help on that defensive front, and Markell Winters is going to be able to. Even at 6'5", 260, Jones is going to play him. They run a 3-4 scheme, so he'll play a little stand-up outside linebacker this coming season down there for the Bobcats, I believe. I think they're the Bobcats. And, you know, so he moves very well for a young man at 260 pounds. And with a 6'5" frame, he's got the ability to add 20, 25 more pounds of good weight on there and will really be a force one day. I'm looking forward to seeing him play this fall on the JUCO League, and then it'll be exciting to finally get him on campus in January. Originally signed with East Carolina out of Tallahassee, Florida. Ran into a few issues there, ended up coming back to Mississippi. You know, that I once heard an old saying, Michael, that, you know, nobody who lives in Alaska is from Alaska, and everybody that moves there is on the run from something. It's almost that way, it seems like, with the Mississippi JUCO League a lot of the times. You know, if people run into a little trouble, where do they end up to continue their college football careers? Where did Chad Kelly end up? Mississippi JUCO. So Markell Winters is a big pickup. 247 is not rated in yet, no one has, but I would expect him to be rated a high 3-star, perhaps even a low 4, once some stars get put next to his name. But, Michael, again, exactly what Hugh Freeze said he wanted to do is go out and get some guys to help him on that defensive line in that linebacker corps, and boom, less than a week from signing day, he's already gotten one guy.
Yeah, it's exactly what Coach Freeze said last week in the press conference. He said he's going to go after front seven guys. And and sure enough, he starts it off with a big get who I'm with you on it. He reminds me a lot of a Fadal Brown, and he's certainly not going to be. He may be the first JUCO front seven guy we see. They certainly won't be the last. You'll see a good flood of them as Ole Miss hopes to get some immediate depth for 2017.
I agree with that, Dave. A question for you. Now, Hugh Freeze is in his fourth year here in Oxford, and obviously the win totals have increased, 7 the first year, 8 the second, 9 the third, 10 this past season, and a Sugar Bowl championship to boot. Factoring all that in, if there was a movie made about Ole Miss football, who would play Hugh Freeze?
Trying to think. Who was it that played?
Michael, you've got an answer, man.
Well,
I'm in.
Who was it who played?
Dennis Quaid.
That's a good one. What about Matthew McConaughey? Maybe a little bit of. I think McConaughey may have the personality for it.
That ended sourly the last time he was a head coach in a movie.
Yeah. I'm not for that. I don't know about Matthew McConaughey. Michael, who did you say? Dennis Quaid.
Oh, yeah, Dennis Quaid, he's married to an Ole Miss girl, and he sort of has that coach look.
Yeah, and, of course, Randy, his brother, could play Dan Mullen in the movie.
There you go.
Yeah, okay, I can go
with
Dennis.
Keep it on the family.
Quaid. That would be funny. That would be funny. Dennis Quaid, okay, I can see that. Dave, you come up with Matthew McConaughey. Bro, I can't see that.
You can't see it?
I can't see it.
Who was it that played Freeze? I know Freeze was his his name was not recalled in The Blind Side. Who was that played Freeze in The Blind Side?
I don't know, but that guy was going to play Freeze. They called him Coach Burt in The Blind Side.
Yeah, Coach Burt. I was just trying to remember the name. I'll have to go back and look at it.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay, right now I think Michael came closer to answering that with the
I'll agree. Michael won that debate.
Yeah, McConaughey, I think you probably just have a man crush on McConaughey, and that was the first person that came to your mind, Dave. I don't think so. I caught him
that. No man crushes here. No man crushes.
All right, Michael, who would play Chad Kelly in a movie about Ole Miss football?
Oh, it's got to be the acting debut of famous Cleveland rapper Machine Gun Kelly. I mean, you already got Kelly right there. They sort of have that same look about them. And if you can't get MGK to cover up his tattoos, then I guess for Chad, you'd have to go with, I'm not sure.
You know,
I got stuck on the Kelly train. I didn't consider it too well.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Hollywood, they can do a lot of stuff. They could make Tom Cruise play Chad Kelly and it'd be believable. I've seen movies where, you know, Cruise is like 5'4" or something, and you know, you see him in Top Gun, and by the way, they're remaking that movie. I'll have to go and see that. You know, they can make you look huge when you're not on the Hollywood screen. So they can make Tom Cruise look like they'd have to shave his head, dye his hair black, and then make him look like he's 6'2". Well, you know, they could probably do that. The better question for you, Michael, probably should have been, who would play Andy Kennedy in a movie?
Oh, Andy Kennedy. Well, first of all, he's got to have the height, because Andy Kennedy's every bit of about 6'7". And Andy's a little easier because you just need a skull cap for him, a flesh-colored swimmer's cap.
I got an answer for that one. Shaven-headed Woody Harrelson could play Andy Kennedy.
they got the same one-liner.
There you have it.
I guess J.K. Simmons looks the most like him right now, but I don't think J.K. is close to that height.
Yeah, but, you know, with the camera angles and all that, they can fix all that. Anyway, somehow or another, you got to work Morgan Freeman into the script. You know, he'll have to do something. Morgan's around Ole Miss enough. You wouldn't want to disappoint him. And maybe Joe Warren Adams, he lives here in Oxford. Well, it'd be a fun movie to cast. All right,
absolutely.
Well, coming up tonight, and listen, we appreciate you guys giving us your time for the podcast. Any closing thoughts, Michael, Dave?
Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, no, all you, Dave.
Well, just for me, over the weekend, I just enjoyed a great time with the family. My 7-year-old son, he has been excited to be a big brother, and he doesn't like the crying. if he sees his baby brother crying, Nolan, if he's crying, Jacob, he just gets all hysterical and immediately goes for the passy to calm the atmosphere. And it's just funny to it's really cute to watch him try to be the big brother, and he's doing a great job at it. But like I said, it was just a great fun family weekend, and just look forward to the years ahead with our big family. And and as far as with Ole Miss sports, we're getting into this 2017 class, and it's going to be exciting to cover the recruiting trail heading in.
Okay, that sounds awesome. And over the weekend, I relearned how to play Jimi Hendrix "Purple Haze" on my guitar. So that's what I did. I took a little time and did that, and my fingers are sore right now, but they shall heal. So, recapping today's show, we opened up talking about the quote unquote dark cloud over the Ole Miss football program right now. Guys, everything we're hearing is that everything is going to be okay. Now, it's a little unnerving. I totally get it when we're told five infractions and, or let me say five alleged infractions and only three having to do with the current staff. And then the AP story comes out and it's like, wait a minute. It's like 13 of the 28 are football related and 9 of the 13 have occurred under the current staff. But we kind of broke that down for you on what we're understanding those 9 things may be. And that's, you know, and again, I want to underscore, David Brandt is an excellent reporter for the Associated Press. He had his ducks in order before he released that story. You can take it as the gospel. This is not a guy trying to agitate or stir anything up. He's doing his job, simply reporting the news. So that's where we think we stand right now. And we'll see what the coming days bring. But again, you know, unless I'm being flat out lied to by a lot of people, the mountain's not going to be nearly as big as what some in some quasi-media quarters are hoping for right now. But that's going to do it for us today on this edition of Rebel Rise Live. As always, we appreciate you giving us a small part of your day. And as we sign off every time, for Dave Bevan, Michael Quirk, I'm David Johnson, wishing you all hotty toddy.